Josh Schuler.
Yay.
Okay, so MeFlow is this software as a service that gives us an opportunity to kind of peel back the curtain, peek inside the toolbox, look underneath the hood to what is actually going on with these institutional investing ideas and how can we use them, right? Do you have anything to add?
Yes. It's giving us a playbook of investing ideas that have been vetted and trusted for decades, literally, and equipping the active self-directed investor, of which there are, you know, a growing number of those, with that playbook so that they have more ideas, right? So that they can be more active in the markets and have something better than hope as a key strategy to get the outcomes that they're looking for.
And these are really brilliant ideas, I might add. Ideas that are not singular to one person, right? They're ideas that have been used for a long time, like you said, yep, by a lot of different organizations, most notably these big institutions. Mm-hmm. But what I think makes MeFlow so interesting is that it was started by one person. And that one person is you, Josh. So I want to know, what makes Josh tick? What made Josh start MeFlow? Yeah. You've created this company that is kind of doing some pretty cool things. So who are you and what are you doing here?
Who am I? What am I doing? So, I mean, I was 13 years ago and I was like the investor generation. We had the 08, 09 financial crisis and was getting my MBA. I was a non-traditional student. So I long since graduated from my undergrad and was getting my MBA and was in a corporate finance class at night. And I was coming back to my place of employment, talking to my boss, and he was asking about my classes. And I was like, oh, I'm in this, you know, corporate finance class. And he said, well, I bought this stock the other day. And I was like, I don't even know how to buy stocks. And he's like, oh, it's easy. You go to this website and you connect it to your bank account and then you can fund it and you can buy stocks. And
yeah, for like $10 a trade, right?
Yeah. It was a little less expensive. That was kind of the beginning of like reduced commissions, but it was still fairly expensive, especially relative to today. And I said, okay, well, like, what did you buy? And he's like, well, I bought this, you know, like regional bank stock. And he's like, you know, anytime I sit at this place, you know, I buy it and it, you know, I was like, okay, great. Well, I was like, okay, well, this guy, I kind of trust him. He seems to know what he's doing. So I went home and talked to my wife and I said, hey, let's try this out. You know, it could be an extension to my MBA work and understanding corporate finance, and let me see if I could figure this out
for the paper that you have to write at the end of the year.
Right. And she was like, okay, we put $200 into this account and the worst possible thing that could happened. I lost everything. No, actually in a month it had doubled. And I went, huh, okay, so what did my retirement account do last year? And what did that do in one idea? And I thought I was a fairly smart dude. What, could I find more ideas like this? Because this is like game changer, right? And at the time I was working in as a nonprofit, and I like, this is, I could do the nonprofit work and I could still have a pretty decent retirement, you know, because I'm not just having to, you know, lean on income, which in nonprofit space isn't great. So this could be a way to like grow wealth and still do this important work. So that started this journey of trying to find ideas around markets, and eventually led to a career change where I, you know, was in markets full time. And to the point now I've been an active investor, you know, sometimes day trader, but active in ideas all the time. Have built skill development firms for people that look to build skill to do active day trading, specifically in the futures industry. Have worked for a futures brokerage, ran a managed futures desk, and have been, you know, kind of from the retail side to the institutional side. And that's really shaped, you know, like how do I think about markets and even what makes a good investment when it comes to markets. Through that experience and tenure, I've learned that the things that most people think make good investment decisions are not what the ones who are actually outperforming the market use to make decisions. Like when you ask most active investors, even today, like I'll ask my kids because they've all got like Robinhood accounts. Okay, like, well, you know, what'd you buy? I bought Nike, right? Because he likes Nike. He's into Jordan. So he buys a Nike stock. Okay, great. Where are you getting out? What do you mean? Well, like, what's the price target? He's like, higher? I was like, do you know what's reasonable to expect out of that? No. You know, there's just higher because that's what's been taught. So when I was running a managed futures desk, you know, like you've got a risk manager that's like can see all of your trades. They come by and they go, okay, well, hey, you put this trade on. That's a lot of capital. why are we in this position? What do we stand to gain if you're taking on this risk? Which is that's a business mindset. If it not be markets, but like if you're in any business, you want to invest in your business or grow your business, good and prudent business development people think through, do I have a reasonable hypothesis on why this risk is worth the investment? And then how am I going to know that I am wrong so that I can cut this thing, get back to the sidelines to look for the next idea? And that was like a Damascus Road experience for me, coming from a retail side as an investor and then going to the institutional side, was, oh my gosh, it's not that these guys are like that much smarter than anybody else, but they are approaching this thing totally differently than anybody else who has their own self-directed account. Like they're just looking at opportunity as, oh, well, like there's an inciting event or there's a news story. And like, that's the trigger that triggers me in, and that opportunity is a trigger. No. From an institutional perspective, opportunity is not the trigger. Opportunity is that there is a reasonable place that we're going to get to, or a behavior that's going to be seen in this asset, and we're not there yet. And so I'm in a position today with risk controls around that to get to that. And so that has been impactful for me. And it's kind of built a passion for me that wherever I can kind of share that gospel, that there's other ways to approach markets. Like, you don't have to just bury your head in the sand when we're in bear markets, even though they're rare. Like, there's all kinds of things that you can be doing. You don't have to like weather a stock that you bought that just is like in a long drawdown. You don't have to do that. You can get out of it. I mean, you can come back to it another time. You can get out of it and you can deploy it into something else.
Yeah. I saw a tweet the other day that said something along the lines of, like, you know, treat your retirement accounts the way we treated our faces at the start of COVID. Just don't touch it. You know, like, we don't necessarily have to do the conventional wisdom of just wait it out, weather the storm. I mean, that, you know, people have been proven to make money in these down markets using kind of just like really unique strategies. It sounds like to me, what I hear you saying is that you've figured it out. You've cracked the code, Josh.
I don't know that we've cracked the code. I mean, stuff that's been around forever. It's just the access, because there's been benefit to institutional players that the average investor doesn't have more active participation in it. And there's been fee structures around that. And there's also a degree of which most active investors don't want to be looking at this stuff all the time. Like, it's like, I get excited looking at squiggly lines. Most people don't, right? They really get some comfort by knowing that, hey, I can just look at this thing once a quarter and I can get the tax benefit of fully funding my IRA. And then, you know, I can hope down the road that that's going to work. And everything's been kind of aligned to support that, and that it's worked across the industry. What it's not ultimately worked for is serving that investor long-term, or putting them in a position where they can have a predictable expectation of what kind of liquidity they'll have at a certain point, or, you know, how to benefit from that. And that's the part that tugs at my heart and says, but wait a second, like, they're the people that are putting money into this are the people who are, you know, living and dying and supporting the society and the structures that we all benefit from. Should they not be able to have access to something that can, you know, give them a future, you know, that delivers value to them? And the answer is as easy as just looking at markets differently.
Yeah. There's a book by Adam Grant that kind of talks about this, about thinking differently, that kind of introduces these concepts and these ideas of just looking at things differently. Have you read that book? That's a good book.
I have. I do. I love that book. I love.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
I get really excited about outcomes that people experience. And this is tied to investing. You know, like the ways that we approach markets are largely informed by what's been taught to us, you know, or what's been, you know, kind of socially conformed, or what is the messaging that's around that. And so, you know, it's pretty strong. Like you mentioned that of the tweet of like, just leave it alone. Don't touch it. There is wisdom to that. Like, let's not discount that. Like, for some, that's the best thing that you should do.
Sure.
Like, you should just leave it alone. And yeah, you may not get to time what's going on, but there is historical evidence that you could see a 6.2% inflation adjusted return over 20 years. There is math that says if I'm in the markets for 10 years or longer, I have historically always been guaranteed a return, even if that return is 0.001. You know, part of what we're doing with MeFlow is leveraging an opportunity that Robinhood as a platform and as a company opened up, that I don't even think Robinhood understands what they did. You know, like they talk about that they democratize finance, right? That's kind of like the line that they tote around there. And in some ways they did. If democratizing it means that you gave access to everybody. So, and we see this in the data. We see this in the number of users. There's more active daily logins to Robinhood than Schwab, Fidelity, TD Ameritrade combined. That they're very active. They're coming up with new ideas. This is awesome. They're more diverse. They're younger. They're trying new ways to approach markets and having new ideas. Schwab did a study on this investor generation, which is like the bulk of Robinhood's users. People who started after 2020, about 15% of all investors. And they are a really cool and savvy group. I've been in like Discord rooms and with these investors sharing ideas and trading ideas. And they're really intrigued by the opportunity that's available to them in markets, which is a really great thing. They got access. What they don't have is they don't have like really good, reasonable ideas that have kind of an institutional value to them. There's lots of what I would call retail investing ideas that actually aren't valid. There's more myth to them than merit. Things like, well, why buy this stock? Because that stock is, I like the story of that stock and what they're doing. I don't know if anybody, I mean, if you don't know this, it's good to know, but when you buy a stock, you're buying a future.
Sure.
You are not buying the current value of the company. You're buying the future value of the company. So you're buying the story that it's going to continue to deliver additional value beyond what it is. And the street value is not even, it's typically a multiple of what the actual value of the company is on like an accounting basis.
Right.
But what are we told? We're told, buy in companies because you like them. You know, like Elon Musk was on the other day on Twitter and somebody asked him like, well, how do you, you know, buy stocks? And he's like, you know, well, I think you, you know, buy, you know, a company that you like the story. And as long as that story's there, then you stay with the company. If the story changes, then you get out. That has nothing to do with like price targets, risk management. And the reality is that often we see the price of the stock, which price is an advertising mechanism. And we'll have conversations about that at some point about what that means. But price is an advertisement to someone to participate in a position around what the perceived value is of that asset. That being said, it can often be disconnected from reality. That's what actually creates the opportunity. Is that like if I have a narrative where, say, for example, there's not enough crude oil to supply the demand or the future demand, and that's a kind of bullish thing for crude, right? That from a fundamental macroeconomic perspective, if there's good demand and future demand in crude oil, that should mean that the actual price of crude should go higher. And then you come in one day and you're like, well, crude's $10 a barrel lower. What's going on? Opportunity. Why? Because nothing has changed in the narrative, but there's a momentary disconnect between the narrative and the price, which thus creates opportunity. Now, to leverage that, you got to think totally differently, right? The typical investor has been primed to buy the thing that's hot and not take the position before the trend happens, you know, or get into it before the real opportunity is. 80% of all investing gains are made at the beginning stages of a trend and not at the end. The people that get in the trend at the end are the ones that like, oh, sure, they could see that there was a trend there. About the time that everybody can identify the trend, it's over. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I think about like business ideas, like here in town a couple years ago, there were these escape rooms. Like you've got these in the South,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like everybody's got an escape room and you're like, hey, I got an idea. Hey, Phil, do you want to go in business? Okay, Josh, what's the idea? Let's open an escape room. You know, like how excited are you about that? Not. Nah. Why? Because there's 10 of them down the street. You know, like the trend is well established. The opportunity was on the first one.
Or right? Axe throwing, when it was, you know.
Axe throwing rooms. Yeah. Yes. You know, like that's the, this is also the bane of like multi-level marketing. It's like, you know, who benefits the most from multi-level marketing? The first couple people, you know, it's the people who are late that you're trying to suck into this thing and convince there's still opportunity are the bag holders. We see this in investing too. That one of the narratives that's evolved over the last couple of years is this idea of diamond hands. Have you heard this?
I have not.
You've not. Oh my gosh. Or HODL, HODL. So like it came from crypto, but it's basically, it's like, I'm going to hold until I die. Like I'm like ride or die on this thing. I'm holding this thing. And then diamond hands is like, I'm not going to cave. I'm going to hold this thing. And you know, we're going to go to the moon, right? To the moon. That's not real. But anyway,
yeah, I think I own some Safe Moon stock. I think I bought it when it was like 0.00001 and maybe we've lost a zero in there.
Yeah,
maybe
something like that. But the reality is that like, let's say a meme stock, like a GameStop or AMC, like I saw investors like on Wall Street Bets or Reddit or some of these things, or on Twitter, where a lot of, you know, really active self-directed investors, which that's not really MeFlow's bag. I mean, we're looking for people who want to be less active than that. But what the, kind of the bleeding edge of this are looking at is they'll say things like, well, you know, I'm going to hold. Well, here's the thinking. If no one else buys, the price doesn't just magically float higher. It just doesn't go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
When is an auction over? When the last person who buys bought. That's when it's done. When's the trend over? When the last person who buys bought. And, you know, if no one else buys, who does that last buyer become? The first seller.
Mm.
You know, and we shift from a different behavior. What's cool about how to be consistently profitable and to do well in investing over time is to understand that those mechanics of behavior are the fundamental that I can trust.
And that's why you started MeFlow.
And that's why we started MeFlow, to like bring this to the masses. MeFlow for the masses.
That's it, baby.
Power to the people.
Hit us with a Twitter handle. Where can people find MeFlow?
So they can always find us at the website, which is MeFlow.com, MIIFLO.com, or on Twitter, MeFlow app, all one word.
Perfect. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thanks, brother.
Thanks again for listening to MeFlow Magic. I'm your host, Phil Knipe. And thanks as always to Josh Schuler, El Jefe, as he's affectionately known at the MeFlow Studios in Fort Collins, Colorado. If you like what you hear, do us a huge favor and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And please consider writing a review as well. It really helps us reach more listeners and ultimately keeps us going. The content, views, and opinions expressed in MeFlow Magic are for educational purposes only. As with all investments, there is a risk of loss, including principal, and no host or guest of MeFlow Magic shall be held liable. You should consult a financial advisor before making any investments relating to stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or whereby other investments relating to money. In other words, do your own research. This show is produced by me, Phil Knipe.